It was Nike inspired, Nike ad inspired.
Do you want this?
That was very intentional.
I said, do you want this?
My favorite scene to work on is a drill called the QB reverse drill. It was, I think, a really good opportunity to demonstrate kind of how rhythmic and poetic football is.
Mostly, we grind.
Every single action and sound kind of became a note in this harmony of a drill. Everything from the cursing, like his teammates cursing, the jugs machine impact, and it was like a beautiful and bloodied symphony.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Post Production Club podcast. Excited for today's episode where we talk the new Jordan Peele produced horror thriller, a fun take on a Nike commercial meets horror film where we see what it takes to be the best. I know when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then it kind of has this moment where everything switches and you're like, whoa, what is happening? So I'm excited for you guys to hear the conversation with editor Taylor Joy Mason. The film is from director Justin Tipping, who has a lot of music video and commercial experience. And so it's cool how he brought that style into this film and getting to hear Taylor's take on what it was like working with him, working under the kind of Jordan Peele brand. I really think we need to be keeping an eye on Taylor. She is going places. So without further ado, let's dive into the conversation. All right, well, welcome, Taylor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Where does this podcast find you today?
I'm in LA at home, listening to the birds, looking at some trees, touching grass.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you grow up in LA?
No, I grew up in Seattle. Kind of, well, Atlanta by way of Seattle, but that's where I was raised for the most part. Very different, but yeah, I miss it.
And how long have you been in LA?
About 15 years, I think now. 15 years is wild. But I first moved here in 2010 for school. And then I think I moved back to DC for a time, worked there, and decided, like, I know I wanted to be in the movies in the future world. And so I moved back. But yeah, I think a total of 15 years, which is wild.
So how did you get into and decide wanting to actually work in film?
I mean, I was kind of a late bloomer, I'd say. Like, I got into this or was introduced to it when I was a junior in undergrad. So kind of late compared to a lot of my colleagues. Like, I was mostly outside climbing trees in Seattle and riding horses and picking huckleberries, like when everyone else is watching Star Wars and falling in love with with movies. It was my junior year in college when I took a broadcast journalism class. I was a journalism major, poli-sci minor, and we were tasked with kind of cutting our own news packages. And I really enjoyed that part. It's kind of the only part that I enjoyed. And, I kind of learned that was something that people did and earned a living from it, which was amazing, and just wanted to learn as much as I could about it. So I took more film classes and decided that still wasn't enough. And so went to film school at AFI, which is, where I met Justin Tipping, the director.
That's awesome. I was wondering how you got connected with him. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we went to school together in 2010. He was a year ahead of me. So we didn't work like directly with one another on the same projects, but, we're very aware of one another and the work that we had done when we were there, and kind of had a mutual respect at least established. And then after school, we kind of loosely stayed in touch. He'd kind of throw projects my way, like side projects, sizzle reels, shorts, like just stuff that I'd be working on the side while I was assisting in the feature world and like I'm doing the admin of it all. And so, yeah, I mean, we kind of just stayed connected through the years until 2018, which was our first kind of real project together on a half hour comedy called 20s for BET. And it was kind of the first time we were able to collaborate in a room and I don't know, get a sense of the like creative, I don't know, fluidity we had, I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, we had kind of the same sense of humor and even kind of the workflow in the room felt very easy and kind of established our shorthand there. So yeah, I mean, it all started from school, but kind of evolved through the years. And then I think a turning point, I think like when him was kind of introduced was 2022. I was at Sundance for the first feature I cut called Birth Rebirth. And he was kind enough to come up to watch. And it was, sadly, he couldn't get in the theater because it was shut down, apparently, halfway through because maybe three people passed out, which was crazy. I mean, and I'm not going to say it's because of the film, like I want to, but, you know, it could have been a smell in the room. Who knows what it was. But so, yeah, the screening shut down. He couldn't see it. But I think, you know, we had conversations kind of in lieu of that in hindsight were just, you know, far more valuable. Like we talked about our family histories. My dad, I talked about how he played in the league and, you know, his kind of journey in his career and his subsequent passing. And he talked about the loss of his father. And like, we really connected on a level that we really hadn't in the past through like, you know, just our side projects. And I think in hindsight that kind of sowed the seeds because like a year after that, when him actually landed on his desk, he gave me a call and, you know, the rest is history. So,
which I'm so excited to dive more into. I want to come back to all of that, but that is a wild story of people passing out in the theater. Yeah. I feel like someone needs to make that movie where it's like about people watching the film while passing out and whatever happened in that theater.
I agree. I mean, we have test screenings and sometimes they'll film them to get people's reactions. And I mean, it would be a huge stamp of approval if in a horror film, a few audience members passed out and like, you know, were revived and okay and lived healthy lives long after. But like, yeah, I think that was very buzzworthy.
Well, maybe they were rebirthed.
Nice. I see what you did there.
Just like learning to edit and, you know, taking on that craft as a career later in college, you don't just become talented just from that time frame. I feel like there's gotta be, tell me about like what in your life has informed you to be in the place that you're at, very skilled, accomplished, you know, editor who's working on some really cool things, but having picked it up kind of so late, what in your life has led you, you know, to be the kind of editor that you are?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I'm still kind of becoming the editor that I want to be. It's like I'm constantly learning. And I do think AFI was a fantastic launching pad. I mean, the school, I mean, just had everything. It's a conservatory. And like, you know, I feel like it's 2 years of boot camp where you're just constantly making movies like one after the other. And you're learning lessons really fast and really hard. So it's an intensive, you know, education. And I think the most invaluable, I think, part of that, actually, there's two things. There's one, just kind of the group of colleagues who are like-minded and supportive and creative and all kind of have like this same goal in mind to make films. And then there's a sense of confidence that you get from that education and feeling like you're well prepared to kind of step foot outside the doors and you know, jump right into assisting, really, which I mean, usually there's a few steps before that, but I think they prepared us well enough to actually earn a living as soon as we graduated. And I don't know, I think because I actually didn't know much about the industry before school or film or anything, I was kind of naive stepping out and just kind of said yes to like everything. You know, I didn't really know exactly the direction I wanted to go right away and just kind of said yes to like reality. I think my first project was on a Fuel TV, which was like a Fox Sports subsidiary, and Hooters and UFC was the programming that I worked with. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I mean, I've never watched UFC in my life, but like, I want to edit. I want to get my hands on whatever. And so I kind of got started that way, saw how things were running in that space. And I kind of picked up a very laissez-faire attitude, which I think is necessary when you're running a cutting room at some point, just because there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of heads in the room and opinions and things like that. And oftentimes you're tasked with really like calming people down and being like the voice of reason and just saying, it's going to be okay. This movie's going to be great. I learned that like way back then, just to approach, you know, approach this as if, you know, we're making movies, we're not saving lives, calm down. And then like people are disarmed and like do their best work. I learned that way back then and kind of carry that with me through every project. And I think that's the one kind of consistent feedback I've gotten throughout. It's just that there's a calmness to the room that I think people appreciate. And I also kind of apply that to my work. Like I kind of remove pressure from myself to get it right away. And that it's just kind of necessary to get your stuff on a timeline. Just get it on a timeline. And then like you can hone, get polished and finesse as the time goes. So yeah, I mean, it's like a lesson that is so valuable now that I had no idea back then I would appreciate as much as I did. And outside of that, it's just kind of the rooms I was in, the people I was working with. Like a connection or a colleague at AFI, Mary Lukashevich, was my classmate, actually. She introduced me to the Blade Runner team and brought me on as a second assist. And that was my first kind of world or first kind of look at films on that scale. Like, it's just huge. It was such, there's like people in and out constantly and lots of names to know. I really got to see how the sausage was made and like, yeah. And it was almost like a second AFI experience. It was like that kind of intense but fun. It was like in a safe place where I could just kind of observe and learn and look at timelines and see like how Joe would, you know, transition from scenes or how he would kind of look for objectivity in his cuts by like switching to black and white, you know, like I think he's shared this over the years, but just kind of seeing that firsthand and like right in front of my face, I was really able to kind of, learn from looking at that, in proximity to the process.
What do you feel like from your childhood has informed how you edit and your approach to filmmaking?
I mean, that might be the lack of like structure and rules and like that people I think learn when they're watching movies at an early age. I just didn't have, it was kind of like, I kind of approached it as with a blank slate. Like I kind of, there was like no outside of like, I mean, AFI taught you about a structure, but they were really just like showing you cool movies that they made, you know, our instructors. But yeah, I mean, I kind of didn't come to it. I didn't come to film or television with any preconceived like must do's or must haves in the process. I think I've always been a very, instinctual kid, like a very literal kid. I like react to what's happening in the present moment consistently. And that was, that really helped in the cutting room. I didn't really anticipate that, thought that would be more of a hindrance, but it, like, I don't know, really allows me to see the material honestly. And I mean, that's not something that, like, was nurtured. I think that's just kind of how I am and have always been. But yeah, that kind of blank slate, bringing that is kind of helpful to approach material objectively at this stage.
I love that reflection on being able to go, yeah, I'm not coming in with a lot of the same, you know, idolizing either certain films or editors and trying to emulate their style, or come in, yeah, with any preconceived notion, being able to just approach it in a way that is fresh and authentically you.
Yeah.
I would love to hear how you went from school and the first few projects into working on projects like Dune.
I think we were working with, yeah, tapes back then, like SR tapes and stuff. And I was doing a lot of digitizing and, you know, watching and actually cutting, because that just for fun. And then I ended up moving back to DC to work at this post house, like a short form post house, turned kind of agency that did a lot of like commercials and stuff for PBS and Discovery and Nat Geo, just all the stuff that's kind of in DC world and stuff on the Hill. And so I was there for a few years, and I just, you know, I think I really wanted to dive into features. Like, I just, like, I think I missed, you know, the playing with everything that I learned at AFI, and I really wanted to, experience that again. And I felt like, you know, short form, while I got to edit a little bit, I just, yeah, I really wanted to tell like stories on a larger scale. So I moved back to LA. I assisted for a indie through a friend from AFI. I think it was a colleague recommended me for this role. After that, I assisted on Super Pets. I think I was a first on that one. And then in the middle of that is when my colleague Mary introduced me to like the Blade Runner crew and had me come on as second. Yeah. And then once I worked on Blade Runner, you know, I was like familiar with kind of the team and how they ran things. And it's, you know, easy for Mary to, like, usually you try to hold on to the people that you work with if you've already established a rapport and workflow and all that. So that was 2018. And I actually jumped on 20s to edit and I got that opportunity from a colleague at AFI. Her name is Denise Davis. She produced all of the like ESA stuff back in the day and is now like doing her own thing at Color Creative. And she's the one that kind of got me in the room to interview for 20s. And that was my first editing credit with Justin. Like, so it's all like very familial, really, this whole evolution. Yeah. And then I think COVID happened. And so there wasn't a lot of like editing work after that. But, and so Dune 1 was taking place and Mary was looking for an assist. So I jumped on that. You know, you're just, your eyes are watering every day looking at this footage, looking at the cut. Like, it's just, yeah, I was like excited to go to work every day. I think I got an opportunity to cut on Pose at Ryan Murphy. And like that kind of began my more like getting in the chair and kind of staying in the chair. It was like Pose, then Dahmer, then like a feature. And it kind of like grew from there. So
you mentioned your dad and him being in the league. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I mean, he was actually retired by the time I was born, but I mean, football was still very much a part of our lives after retirement. He was with the Oakland Raiders for about 6 or 7 years, with 49ers for 1 year, and the Baltimore Colts way back when for a year. And he ended up winning a Super Bowl with the Raiders in 81. And I just remember as a kid, like, I would try to put on his Super Bowl ring, but I had to use like 2 or 3 fingers just to fit, because his hands were so big. He was just a gigantic man, just gregarious and like full of love and laughter and huge personality to match his size. And so, yeah, he would walk into the room and just spotlight was on him. And like, you know, I think growing up with that, I was always around his teammates' families, their kids. And like football was always just the underlying hum. It was like always present, even if that we weren't doing anything related to it. I remember them and mostly like looking up because I was little, but they're always like sitting around a table playing cards and talking about or dominoes and talking about like their injuries and like still recovering from their injuries. I know my dad had about 7 knee surgeries and, you know, was still, I mean, he was still basking in kind of the glory of his early days while also like icing his knee and making all kinds of sounds while he was trying to get up from the table. So, you know, it was an interesting dichotomy. Like, I definitely think I had a front row seat to a lot of the themes that we end up exploring in him. But yeah, I mean, it was both kind of a blessing and a little challenging to watch. But at the end of the day, like, I think he was really happy. He was like proud of his accomplishments and we were too.
What was his name?
Lindsey Mason.
Lindsey. And how would you feel like he would feel knowing you're the editor of this film?
I mean, I really hope that he'd be over the moon. Like, I really think that, especially with how daring the film is, like how bombastic it is, I think he would love that. Like, that's kind of the guy he was, or he kind of pushed the envelope a little and really challenged people to think deeply about things and not take things at face value. And I think that's what this film is. And it's just got some sauce. Like, it's just got that kind of swagger sauce that he embodied, like, on a daily. Mm-hmm. That growing up, I always wanted to be as cool as him. And this is kind of my attempt at projecting that, this film. I really think he'd be proud. And that's kind of, something I thought about when I was making the film, like, just how would he look at this scene and how would he feel about it? Do you think it's true to his experience? Kind of ask myself those questions with him in mind, which I think was super helpful for authenticity.
And when did he pass?
He passed in 2008, and he had it wasn't like a direct football injury, but he had like a heart disease called sarcoidosis. And he was diagnosed about 10 years before he passed. He was like kind of one of the longest living patients with this disease, and watching him manage it through the years was like trying. But I think a lot of his sports history and kind of this, even the sports psychology that he learned, really kind of helped him cope with this like terminal disease. And like, I don't know if anything made those injuries worth it, it was that. It was just kind of the mindset that you learn when you're an athlete and like how to kind of, break through or accomplish what people see as impossible. And I think him being one of like the longest living, with this disease is like a testament to that. So
I'm really sorry, Taylor, that he passed.
Oh, thanks. I mean, we're happy. Like, I think now I just, every time I think of him, it's fondly and it's with good memories. So I think I'm part of like, I'm through at least the hardest part of the grieving process. And now I can just kind of like, anytime I think about him, you know, I think about positive, good times and the things that made me laugh and, you know.
I'm sure it wasn't an easy process, and it's probably not going to ever be easy.
Right.
But I feel like you definitely are carrying on his legacy in a really cool way, and I get to know him through you.
Oh, man. Oh, that's amazing. I'm so glad to hear that. Like, yeah, that might make me cry. So, yes, I'm. Thank you for sharing that.
This film is like a really cool part of that legacy. You talked about it having some sauce, some spice, and some really cool style. Tell me about that. Was that like always in the initial creative direction from Justin? Was that something that you got to collaborate and bring a lot into? How did you guys kind of land in that more experimental and stylistic vibe?
I mean, Justin has the sauce himself. I think that's also kind of why we're friends. Like, we just kind of value those, like, natural style. Like, I mean, he kind of has like this effortless coolness without doing much. Don't get me wrong, he's a nerd. Like, we're all nerds. Like, that's why we're filmmakers. We're nerds. But like, yeah, I think he kind of naturally brings it to the table. He was a music video director back in the day. And like, I mean, that's kind of his second language is stylistic editing and shooting and photography, all of the above. And so he kind of like, I think planned for this in the script. Like, there was a lot of devices kind of written in, where that give you kind of the idea that this is going to be something hyper stylistic and surreal, and which just gives you a lot of latitude to like create and experiment. So yeah, I think it made sense coming from him, and I was really excited to get started.
Was there any like correlation between the story and the dedication, you know, it all being about the grit that it takes to make it and to be successful and, you know, be surrounded by talented people? Is there any correlation of that to the editing experience and making it kind of in the film industry for you?
I mean, yeah, I think it is endurance. I think it's like, you know, you have to kind of have the skill set and the ability. You got to know the language. You got to know how to do the job. But at the end of the day, it's also like an endurance test and like being able to work and produce even when you're tired, when there's late nights, or, you know, when you have to problem solve and being like supportive creatively too in those processes or in those moments. It's a very like vulnerable process, especially for a director. Like, they're just coming off of a big shoot and like sometimes you're like, I don't even know what I did. I don't know what I made. Like, I don't know, you know, which rightfully so, it's kind of how anyone would react. But, you know, you have to kind of have the right support system, almost like a team. Like, you know, you can't win without everyone playing their part. And I think my part was really to act as like, to act as a support system and a collaborator who's open to like anything really, and willing to try anything, and really be the like kind of creative support when those vulnerable moments happen, because they always do. And sometimes the best work comes out of those moments. But yeah, I think, I mean, I played sports growing up my whole life and kind of, I think also brought that sensibility. I bring that with me to the cutting room oftentimes.
The film feels like it's definitely has a commentary about the kind of dark underbelly of success and what it takes to reach that, especially in the sports world. What is the equivalent for you in the like filmmaking editing post process that you feel like is the grind that you wish didn't exist?
Oof. I don't know if I know. I mean, that's a tough one. Honestly, it really is just time. It's like, especially for me, because I know myself and a lot of editors are kind of, they leave projects like never really feeling like it's finished. Like, you can't really ever finish it. You just kind of have to let it go and be okay with it. And, you know, I'm getting used to the idea. Oh, I've gotten used to it in television, because usually the turnaround's much faster and you can't be as precious about things. But in film, when you've dedicated months to a scene and And then, you know, you're getting notes or there's audiences feedback or, you know, you have to incorporate obviously things that'll make the film better inevitably. And you have to make those changes, but there might not be as much time as there was, you know, initially when you started. So it's like, you can't really be as precious about it, as like intentional about it. You just have to do it and then leave it and exhale. And that's hard. That's hard for me. I'm like a, not a perfectionist. I'm a perfectionist about certain things. And, you know, when the film's over and you got to wrap and you're going to mix and you're like, ah, but that should be like two frames shorter, or like, ah, you know, I can hear this sound thing. So it's like that, learning how to cope, to live with that and let it go. And then that's been challenging. But I think seeing like the reactions I have seen so far, which are positive, are really kind of like making me put those things to bed and not lose sleep over things that no one is even going to notice. hopefully one day, maybe a decade from now, I'll let it go. But it, you know, it's getting better. It's getting easier.
Do you feel like you've had to make any sacrifices to get to where you are?
No, I think because the moment I knew I wanted to do this, I don't know, I was like all in. I think in order to do this job, like, you have to love tedium. There's no way around it. Like, it's a very, you have to like find the beauty in the tedium. The art is in the tedium, which is like a negative way to say it, but it's, that's what it is to most people. And I love it. Like, I can sit there all day and go back and forth from one frame to the next. And like, and in my head, I've done so much work. Like, I, you know, I was like, oh, the film's made. We're good. We're solid. Just changing a couple frames for like, I'm not that slow, but I'm just saying like, that's how much I don't mind the scope of the work. And yeah, so I think once I knew that I loved it, even the parts that people have a hard time with, I was kind of all in. I mean, I get tired sometimes, but who doesn't? I feel like I'd rather be tired on a job that I love than a job that I don't. So
what was your favorite part of working on the film?
I mean, the performances were awesome. Both Marlon and Tyreek, their improv is hilarious. I mean, I feel like, especially on those late nights, they did a lot of fun stuff that are not in the cut, but it just kind of got us through. Like, we would just kind of watch takes, not even like we needed to take a mental break, but we would watch takes that we knew had funny improv just to like cackle, like just to like give us some levity when we were trying to work through longer days. And yeah, I mean, I love performance. I love the music of it all was really fun. Justin's a huge music head. He has really great taste, and like the things that he would kind of come up with, like I'm kind of cutting a scene and he would while watching kind of what's going on and find some inspo and just start listening to music on his phone. And then, you know, we'd experiment with it in the room and just listen to a bunch of tracks to one scene at a time. And I don't know, it was really fun and it felt natural. It didn't feel like it was pressure filled. It was like what you would do with your friends if you weren't working. You'd just be sitting, listening to music and chilling and, you know, talking about it. And so that's kind of what we did in this film pretty often. I think that's why the music is, you know, so dynamic and, you know, he's got some taste that I think he's going to introduce to people in a new way, which is really nice. I'm excited to see how people react to it.
It's awesome. I feel like the style has a lot of inspiration from like a Nike commercial, Under Armour, you know, the fast kind of cut, hard hitting, very like conceptual that you would see in a sports commercial. Was any of that intentional?
Yes, very. I mean, that was kind of his first like reference was a Nike commercial and really wanting to establish that style at the beginning of the film to kind of disarm the audience and also comment on a lot of the kind of contradiction in the sport, which is like glitz and glam. But at the end of the day, it's just, you know, there's a lot of violence. So he really wanted to like bring us into this world in a very hyper stylistic, super pro American, like football championship and all this pomp and circumstance. And, you know, we had a lot of montages in there to kind of, it was Nike inspired, like Nike ad inspired, but also, you know, narratively heavy. So, yeah, I mean, that was very intentional. And then I think the goal was to disarm the audience and kind of switch it off when we get to in Isaiah's world and start to ground us and anchor us in kind of the beginning of the end.
While we're talking now, this film has not come out yet, but I would love to kind of get into specific scenes, and we're free to spoil it. Anyone does not want the film spoiled can stop listening now. But I want to hear from you. What were your favorite scenes or scene to work on in the film?
My favorite scene to work on is definitely one that takes place at the beginning of Act Two. It's like a drill called the QB reverse drill. And Cam is kind of tasked with pivoting and throwing to a receiver in under 2 seconds. And we kind of quickly learn that if he doesn't execute, his teammate is, you know, there's some, oh, I guess I can spoil it. His teammate gets pummeled by a jugs machine. So, and I know that like that being my favorite is kind of dark, but I was really attached to the scene. Like even at the script stage, when I read it, like I was immediately transported to my time on the volleyball court in undergrad when we had to run suicides nonstop, which is basically like this like running punishment. I mean, it's conditioning, it's a conditioning drill, but if we messed up or if we, you know, did something wrong in a drill. And it's just like, I was transported to that feeling of guilt and shame and embarrassment anytime I messed up and my teammates had to run for me. And I remember trying to avoid said punishment and just really being hyper-focused on like the coverage I had behind me to my left or to my right and who's in front of me, the angle of someone's like wrist and elbow, and just trying to like be hyper aware so that I could avoid this, basically, you know, play better. So it was effective, but like, I don't know, I still kind of wake up in like the middle of the night with cold sweats, like saying, I'm sorry, coach. So it's like, I think once I read that on the page, I was like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I got this, like hands down, I can project kind of what Cam is supposed to be experiencing pretty accurately. And that's what I attempted to do. It was also, I think, a really good opportunity to demonstrate kind of how rhythmic and time dependent football is. And like also kind of poetic and musical. And, you know, I think every single movement and every single action and sound kind of became, or at least I tried to treat it like it was a note in this harmony of a drill. They all like played their part, and it is part of like Cam's version of trying to be hyper aware of his surroundings so he can execute. And yeah, I mean, I thought it like, it felt like everything from the cursing, like his teammates cursing, the jugs machine impact, and Isaiah cursing him out as well. Like all of it ended up playing like a composition. And then when Bobby Krillick, our composer, put his actual score under, I mean, that's when it felt like a real, like kind of symphony, if we're using this analogy. And it was like a beautiful and bloodied, you know, version of a symphony. And so, yeah, I was really, really attached to the scene. I honestly, in hindsight, thank Justin for just kind of letting me be as precious as I was about it. I really wanted to take care of it just because I felt so connected to what was going on, minus the brutal bludgeoning, thank goodness. But yeah, I can easily say that's my favorite one. And I really hope people enjoy it and maybe even pass out, you know. Just no, I'm just kidding. I'm not won't go that far.
What was What was the most challenging scene to work on?
They all kind of had their own challenges, but maybe the ending, we just were trying to figure out which direction to go. Like, we were trying to figure out how kind of absurd to make it, or if we wanted to end with a more grounded, naturalistic feel, or if we wanted to go crazy and like kind of Raimi-ish and let the audience kind of decompress, you know, with that kind of absurdity. And yeah, it was the latter, I think, which I think was the right move. Like, it, you know, a lot of this was kind of inspired, not a lot, but like there are things that were inspired by Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain. And I think one of the things, like the through line in that, is the absurdity. It's beautiful, obviously, and there's a bunch of social commentary, but and there's a lot of imagery that you'll see kind of echoed in him, that's done beautifully by Kira. She can do no wrong, my God. And I think that, yeah, I think one of the through lines was like, you kind of need a way to cope with the lack of control one has of their life in this world. And being able to laugh to keep from crying is the way to do it. And so leaning into that at the end was kind of what we eventually decided to do. But the challenge was just trying to figure out, like trying to figure that out, like getting to that part was just, yeah, it was a lot of trial and error and experimentation. But I think we found the right balance that did the film justice.
How did you land there, especially when you have the script to go off of that's pointing you in one direction? How do you then take that and land with the direction that you did? And what other directions were you wanting to go?
Well, I think we're used to kind of things shifting so much from the script stage. I mean, it's like kind of rewritten in production and then rewritten again a few times over in post. And so it wasn't like we didn't have like a whiplash, or we weren't shocked by the fact that it, you know, that we needed to pivot. It was really about considering the whole film and like what, considering what we had, what was currently on the timeline, and the like emotional, not only arc of the characters, like what made sense for that, but also of the audience, like kind of where they're at, like how much energy did they have at that moment to, you know, to watch a bloodbath. Like, I mean, are they like tired by now? Cause there's like, I think there's that film room fight with Isaiah right beforehand, which is pretty brutal in and of itself. And then, you know, we're trying to figure out, okay, then are they going to be okay to see more of this? And I think that's why we decided to lean into the humor of it, to like, even though there's a, it's kind of crazy and there's decapitations and pigs being like gutted and, you know, all that stuff. It's done in a pretty absurd, funny way with triumphant music. And so it was kind of catharsis, I think, at the end of like a film that's very dreamy and abstract and like has a lot to say, but not like yelling it at you and forces you to kind of think. So the audience did work, like they did work in the film, or at least that's our hypothetical audience did as we're making this film. Yeah. And they kind of deserve that catharsis at the end. They kind of deserve to get to like laugh and be like, this is insane. Yeah. And I hope they like look at each other and are like, what the, you know, like, yeah, what is this? This is crazy. Yeah. That's the goal anyway.
You talk about thinking with the audience in mind. How do you balance the tension of editing the film for the director versus editing the film for the audience? Do those ever feel at odds? And how do you rectify that?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the benefits of being an editor, having an editor who's not your director, is just objectivity. And that's what's really important about kind of the partnership, is to kind of get into this knowing that there's like a mutual trust there to point things out when someone is like blind or has blinders on or is seeing something differently because of the experience on set. You know, I mean, I think when people, when they're so aware of like the geography of a set and like the blocking and things like that, that an editor has like no idea of, you know, they might see things, or they might not see like a solution in something that the editor does because they have a more objective, you know, approach. And it's, I mean, which is a, like a privilege. So I think just getting started, like knowing that that is, that's likely, I think he really trusted me to kind of call those moments out and say, hey, you know, I think maybe because of this on set, you might think X, Y, and Z, but actually take a look at this. And from my audience, like an audience's perspective, I have no idea that that flag is over there. Like, I don't even really know where, you know, like geography be damned right now, because I'm approaching this like a newborn baby. So I think he trusted that. And we would test it with people obviously coming in the room, and he was like, yeah, cool. So it wasn't, that wasn't too challenging. It was like just about making sure you work with the right person.
Talk to me about your process. What was it like building an editorial team? Who did you have? How many?
This process was unique because it was, we posted in New York and I'm based in LA. So I actually had like a whole new editorial team. I hadn't worked with anyone before. And so I had to kind of go off of recommendations from friends in LA who'd also worked in New York. And we, you know, they recommended their assistant editors. And I had about two assistants, first, a second. I had a PA, post PA, and our post producer, of course, or post supervisor. And one VFX editor and then a second one who came in, named Dan later on the team. And I mean, I thought it was a pretty solid team. Oh, also our Dylan, our music editor, and Jim, who was our music editor at first. So yeah, two music editors. So yeah, we had a great team of people that I, especially considering I'd never worked with them before. I mean, they were all kind of, you know, just great personality wise, great to just spend time with, honestly. They all loved movies and they all had their strengths too. Like I learned quickly, like who I could lean on for sound design and who I could lean on for really cool, like temp comps and like what people also wanted to do, like how, like if some people wanted to edit, some people wanted to go into music. And so we really tried to incorporate those things into some of their tasks so they could kind of at least do some creative bit. Because I understand like how, you know, how grueling the work can be when you're just dealing with, you know, spreadsheets or FileMaker Pro all day. And I'm like, no, here's something creative to keep you from off the ledge. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm proud to still call some of them my friends and like want to see them outside of the cutting room, which, you know, is an indication of a really good like collaboration and experience. And I'm kind of bummed that they're in New York and I'm in LA. Like I'm kind of having, you know, empty nest syndrome, but the opposite. I don't know what that would be. But yeah, they were great and kind of just made it a very seamless process.
Was that like your first time getting to lead and be in charge of kind of like all of those editors?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest group of people that I like was crewed with. But I mean, I had been, I mostly worked with just firsts before, just a first or a PA, first and a PA or just a first. So yeah, it's definitely the numbers. But I think I'd also trained in that space for so long, like assisting for over, like kind of over a decade, a little under a decade, I guess. And I was kind of used to kind of how people maneuvered and how the cutting rooms ran and who was supposed to do what. And so it wasn't too overwhelming. And really my first Jenny Davidoff Cook, like I would kind of talk to her about things every day and she would kind of disseminate the information and delegate and things like that. So she kind of made things much more streamlined for me, which was made, you know, the kind of the numbers a little less overwhelming. And then once everyone kind of got comfortable with workflow, it just kind of, yeah, it felt like business as usual. So, but it was nice to at least to be able to say that like, oh yeah, no, I can kind of, organize a team and work with a team for over a year and we can make a movie.
What do you feel like are the lessons that you're taking with you onto the next project?
A challenge for me, honestly, and this wasn't, it wasn't a scene or anything. It wasn't like problem solving or performance. It was really like my approach to the cut, because I'm like just naturally a very measured kind of editor. Like that's kind of my style. I have a kind of hands-off sensibility. Like I don't like to cut, which if you've watched him, you would not know that. But I don't like to cut. I really love subtext. I love like subtlety. And I think the biggest challenge for me on this was like that the film required me to be very like loud and very visible, like just because the nature of the style of the film. This film kind of requires you to be very present and like very visible and unapologetic about it and just bold. And that was scary for me at first. I'm not going to lie. Like I've done stylized stuff before. I've done sizzle reels and like music videos, but I just am in the feature format. I wasn't used to it. So I think, you know, I really had to kind of let go of the instinct to pull back. And once I did that, I think I started having a lot of fun. Like I think, you know, the flow of ideas was much easier in the room. There was a lot of inspiration, a lot of experimentation, and I was just down to try it all. And then seeing that I could try it and it worked, you know, narratively was like, I think what helped me. I was like, okay, but are they going to understand it? You know? And I slowly was just kind of, I just kind of like yielded to it and let it happen. And I think I kind of grew as an editor in that sense. So
yeah, it's wild to hear you say that you don't love to cut based on the boldness of this film. And I think that's really cool that you're able to stretch yourself outside of that. And I think the film is better for it. It's really unique in its editing style. And I hope that makes an impact.
You know, I know it's a very loud and flashy film, but it's not quite the nominations of it that I'm even reaching for. I just kind of really want people to see what I can do and that like, I'm not just a horror editor or a comedy editor or a drama editor, that I can kind of like, my goal is to be able to do all of the above. And I think you'll see kind of a little of all of that in this film. And I hope that this is like a testament to that. And I just continue to work on projects as cool as this one, honestly, awards or not. I mean, that, you know, everyone loves a little shine in the room now and then, but like, yeah, I just really hope people can see the work and appreciate the work.
All right. Well, thank you so much for hopping on here, talking about the film, sharing your story. I'm really excited for this film to come out and for everyone to see it. Where can people find you, keep up with you as you continue to work on great stuff?
Instagram, Taylor J. Mason is my handle. I don't really post much. And when I do, it's usually absurd and ridiculous. So apologies in advance. And yeah, other than that, like I'm just currently reading scripts and hopefully when the next thing comes up, I can blast it on there and let people know. But yeah, that's about it. Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you. Like great, fantastic questions. I really appreciate them. And I look forward to the film when it comes out and everyone's reactions.
You've got a ton of great accomplishments, but I feel like you're only getting started. So I'm excited to see more.
Oh man, nice. I hope so.